From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. In the age of the internet, we have access to entertainment, education, and community at the touch of our fingertips. This can have a positive effect on our lives, a new recipe you've grown to love, keeping up with old friends, or even just a funny video to help you get through the day. But not all advice on the internet comes from a trusted source. And sometimes, content that starts out as fun or intriguing can lead you into a different part of the web that you weren't expecting. As we all know, different parts of the internet could become an addictive space, especially when you feel like you're finding your people, finding your tribe in different communities online.
Can't expect us to be wifey material for someone that doesn't deserve it.
Automatically wrong.
So you expect me to give my all and give my best to
someone? I expect you to appreciate the men that built the world around you that allow you to be able to live in a first world country. The entitlement you guys have, the reason the dating market is the way it is today, is because women have abused a free market system.
The Black Manosphere has emerged as one of the most influential and controversial spaces in digital culture. It's reshaping conversations about relationships, gender roles, and identity in the Black community. From viral relationship coaches to heated online debates, this growing ecosystem has fundamentally altered how many approach dating, marriage, and interpersonal connections. What impact does this digital discourse have on real-world relationships and Black mental health?
It is a corner of the internet and a subset of a larger manosphere that is not just Black, but includes lots of white men of all races and ethnicities. And it is a subset that has been developed over time, specifically geared towards Black men's grievances about feminism, about gender roles in our current society, all of those things.
There are a lot of Black men out there who are feeling disempowered and disenfranchised and marginalized. And there are podcasts and other kinds of media out there that have responded to that by catering to the idea that the reason they feel that way is because of women.
At face value, the Manosphere sounds like any other online community with their own morals and values, and if you're interested in that content, you would think it's easy to avoid. But this type of media isn't presented this way at first.
Number one, in order to be a high-value man, it starts with money. Again, like it or not, I didn't put the six-figure thing out there. It's been with us since the mid-80s, and like it or not, that's where this whole thing starts.
There are takes and ideas that may seem appealing and eventually turn into something more.
The men I know that are really making money pay all the bills. Our wives work if they choose to, because we don't want another man telling our wives what to do. You?
Boss ain't working you like this. He can't take care of you like this.
I spoke with Eric Deggans, NPR's TV and media critic. The Indiana University alum authored the book Race Baiter, How the Media Wields Dangerous Words to Divide a Nation.
You know, the thing about social media is that it is very much about finding a specific and enthusiastic audience and then tailoring your content to appeal to that very specific audience. So these media platforms are doing that targeting, and they are using gender and ideas about masculinity as a way to specifically target what they hope would be a loyal following. And so, you know, in a way, it's what a lot of podcasters do. If you listen to Code Switch, you know, Code Switch is focused on people who care about issues of identity and culture and race in America and across the world. And so that allows them to bring a very targeted focus on the material they're creating. And they're serving an audience that is really interested in that. And so as a result, is hopefully pretty loyal to them. Well, you know, the manosphere is doing that, except by their focusing on these ideas of masculinity and gender, and sometimes race, because, you know, when you're targeting Black men, the cultural messaging is a little different, just because African-American male culture is different.
As someone who analyzes cultural trends, what do you think this movement reveals about generational differences in how we discuss race, gender, and relationships?
One of the biggest challenges in talking about media and social issues is recognizing that just because something happens on a media platform that is new, it does not mean that that messaging is new. So, you know, this idea of appealing to men by talking about a traditional gendered social hierarchy where men are at the top of that, that is a very old message. You know, there's a tradition in African American culture of patriarchal control, men being at the top of, you know, civil rights organizations, of churches, of families. And so in a way, this messaging, you know, it harkens back to a lot of that stuff, talking off the top of my head. There's also a sense that this younger generation of Black males is finding it harder to access the elements of success that always marked older generations. Well, of course, economic challenges for younger Black males are such today that it's much harder to be in that space that quickly. And that may breed a certain kind of frustration for people who feel like by the time they're at the end of their 20s, they should be on the road to having a career. They should be on the road to buying a house. They should be on the road to building a family. And they may not feel like they're able to do that. And this generation has also the tough luck of coming of age during the disruptions from the COVID pandemic. You know, we're just now starting to realize how much the pandemic really disrupted our economic systems and just made it tougher for people to live the kind of lives they wanted in terms of even going to school, in terms of when do you get your degree and what kind of jobs are available to you and how can you move up the ladder. And so this is a younger generation that has faced some very specific challenges, and it may have made it harder for them to find traditional success. And when you have a bunch of people who are frustrated and feel like they're being held back by forces they can't quite explain or understand, it makes them right for someone to come to them and say, well, I have an explanation for this. And it's the fact that society has turned away from traditional masculine ideals and it's minimizing you because you're a man and, you know, all of this stuff. So, you know, it makes people ripe to want to believe in that because at least you have some explanation that you feel like you can do something about, right? You can change your life so that you hew closer to these ideals. You can listen to these podcasts and kind of pay attention to what they're saying about how the world works. And you can feel like you're doing something to change your circumstance.
Today, we're joined by experts who approach this phenomenon from different yet complementary angles. A graduate student who wrote a thesis on the Black manosphere, an NPR TV and media critic, and a woman who went on a date with someone who was in the Black manosphere. Nicole Young is a writer and artist who delved deep into the world of the Black manosphere, examining its growing influence on social media and its impact on gender relations within the Black community. Her 2022 article in Elle magazine titled My Brush with the Black Manosphere has highlighted how this online movement has shaped conversations around masculinity, relationships, and social dynamics in Black America. Young is currently on the editorial team of Jacaranda Books, an award-winning, diverse-owned, independent publisher and bookseller. Nicole Young, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Kennedy.
What initially drew you into covering this, and what were kind of your first impressions when you first began your research?
I stumbled upon it because I went on a date where a man was using words that didn't sound normal to me, But I'd heard them before, and I'd heard them on Twitter. I'd heard them actually in some discourse that one of my friends who has a dear friend who actually is a part of the manosphere, he had been saying these words to her for years. And so I had heard them tangentially, but I had never been on a date and someone said the words to me. So when that happened, it immediately triggered me to be like, what is this? And then I did end up going on a deep dive into talking to the researchers who've been researching this space for a really long time, talking to scholars who've been thinking about spaces like this for a really long time. And so discovered that it is a place that has existed for a while in the internet. I think it has grown in its virulence recently, you know, but it's always existed in some form or the other. And when I was growing up, it was like, there were hoteps. Hoteps was like, you know, what I knew. But this is not hotepery. This is something a little different.
And what were some of those words that he was using on the date that you were just like, what in the world is going on?
He said hypergamous. He was talking about pair bonded people. And some of that stuff is just in larger society, right? So this thing about the quote unquote alpha male, which stems from a now extremely debunked theory around wolves. And it was like a study around wolves in captivity. And the people thought that there was such a thing as an alpha wolf in those packs. But it turns out that that's not a natural formation, that wolves only do that when they're in captivity. And so that has since been debunked.
During your investigation, how did you observe the Black manosphere differing from or intersecting with the broader manosphere movement?
I think linguistically and culturally, it just is different, right? And so I talked about hoteps earlier, and like growing up, you know, hoteps were like talking about we're kings and queens, we were kings in Africa. But also the misogyny of a hotep theology is that women have a very particular gendered place and queens should behave in these particular ways. And that language, even though it's morphed and it's not exactly the same, exists to an extent in the manosphere. And the Black manosphere uses the language and the parlance of Black culture, you know, like it just does. And so just linguistically, it's a different space. But I think also the grievances that they are highlighting are actually about Black people's marginalized position in society. And they are going about it 100% the wrong way, right? Like they think their solution to the grievances of Black second-class citizenship are subjugating women. That's their bent. But the way that it differs from the larger manosphere is that it is talking about the things that are particular to Black experiences. The fact that there are laws that if you don't pay your child support, you could go to jail is a thing that disproportionately affects Black people as opposed to white men. And so while the white manosphere might talk about not wanting to pay child support, it doesn't reach the same level of interest and support as it might in the Black manosphere. And so there are things like that, these like cultural things and experiences that relate to our second class citizenship that are present in that space and that is significantly different than their white counterparts.
There's a saying, oh, says that love is blind. Still we're often told.
We've seen the rise of almost the gamification of Black straight relationships. For example, the viral online YouTube show where Black males and females must pop their balloon if they're interested in a contestant or not, and they're all looking for love. And there's so much more content like that. Is there a connection between the rise of this content and the manosphere?
So the date that led me to the article, one of the conversations that I had with him, because he was saying this high value stuff, and I was like, tell me what a high value man is, like, just tell me what it is. And he was like, well, you know, just inherently, this is the 80-20 rule also, which has existed in some form or another for the past 20 years. He was like, you know, 80% of men are, you know, just the average guys, and then 20% are the ones who get all the ladies. And he said this to me on the date. And then later on, when I interviewed Mumia Obsidian Ali, he also said the same thing about this 80-20 rule. But what I said to the man I was on a date with was like, I don't believe that we are ranked. I don't believe that people are rankable. And I just don't believe that we have like an inherent number value. that we carry with us for the rest of our lives. One, I don't believe that we should be, as human beings, commodifying ourselves in that way. And then two, I just don't believe it's objectively so. You know, like, someone may find you incredibly attractive and someone may find you just okay. Someone may think I'm the most beautiful woman in the world, and then I might be somebody else's, like, yeah, she's all right, you know? And like, that's just the nature of preference and humanity and culture and all of those things. There is no inherent value in terms of this kind of value that these spaces want you to believe that there is. These spaces are so homophobic, they're so fatphobic, they're so, like, they value, like, Eurocentric features, even though it's a Black space, you know? And it's just like, you can't tell me that people don't find big women attractive, because they do. They don't inherently have a negative value. You can't tell me that dark-skinned women are inherently unbeautiful, because they are beautiful, right? You can't tell me that this body type, that body type, this disability, this thing are inherently bad, when people across time and space have been attracted to bodies of all kinds. And so I do think the gamification is a place where I think about some of the American dating shows, not just the balloon popping one, which I've seen many times, but other ones where it's like only one type of body is ever featured on these shows. And I do think that it contributes to a feeling that there is one type, even if that's not what we inherently are attracted to, that we're supposed to be attracted to, right? And then it's shameful to have attractions that are outside of the norm. It's shameful to be with somebody who's not rail thin and white, or as white as you can still get and still be looking Black. I think these kinds of gamification things solidify one view of beauty that really does a detriment to all of us. And they're also, to your point about this being a heterosexual thing around the gamification, it also just eliminates queer people. They don't exist at all in these kinds of dynamics. They don't exist at all in the manosphere space. In multiple of my interviews, I specifically asked, I was like, talk to me about queerness, and they don't want to address queerness. And like, there are people who are attracted to all bodies, all people. There are people who are attracted to the same gender. There are people who are attracted to all genders. And this kind of like essentializing of man does this, woman does this, eliminates the nuance that exists in our lives as people who exist on multiple spectrums.
What struck you about how racism and racial trauma shaped the Black manosphere differently from its white counterpart? Many of these Black male content creators speak about feeling doubly marginalized by society at large and within these gender discussions. Could you share what you discovered about how racial experiences influenced their perspectives?
Yeah. So I think back to the things around, you know, colorism and homophobia and all these other isms that exist in the manosphere space, I found that most of these content creators live at the juncture of some of these isms that they are perpetuating. They're not necessarily thin men. They're not necessarily light-skinned men. And I think that them existing in these places that are not quote-unquote traditionally attractive has led them to feel like they should have some sort of something that they don't get. And instead of attacking the system, instead of saying, wow, it's really messed up that we think that dark-skinned people are less valuable, that we as Black people, even amongst ourselves, make fun of those people with bigger noses or bigger lips. That's anti-Black, and we should think about what that is and try to stop it. Instead of going that way, they want to double down on these ideas of, well, there's only one kind of way to be a high-value man. There's only one type of attractive whatever. And then they want to attack Black women who exist the similar spaces, right? Who are like on these other ends of spectrums of isms and stuff like that.
Is there something about the way the Black manosphere was created that can be predictive of its future adaptations? You know, what does it need to sustain itself, and what could some of the lasting impacts be?
The status quo without any kind of interrogation allows spaces like this to continue to grow. What I think it needs to end it, to vanquish it, right, is a true deep dive into a feminist politic, a Black feminist politic in particular, that centers liberation. Like, it's just like, we actually as Black people should desire freedom, and we don't all, right? Like, we are not a monolith. We are a group of millions of people. And so it makes sense that we would have different goals and different objectives and different views of what freedom could be. But many, many, many Black queer feminists have said, when we abolish the gender binary, when we leave it alone, when we relegate it to the past, that enables us to be freer, you know, and just more ourselves. And I think about this in a lot of ways, but the manosphere, I think, is an emblematic of this, which is just like, you think that this is the only way to be, right? You think that the only choice you have is to be a man in only one definition of the word man, when there are millions of types of men, and you could be any kind of them. And I think a Black queer politic, a Black queer analysis of where we are allows people to understand that, like, if you're interested in manhood, you can keep manhood if you want it, but that it can exist in a million different ways. And if you also want to leave manhood, which a lot of people do, if you want to leave it behind, if it actually doesn't serve you in any particular way, you could also do that. And you could still be yourself at the end of the day. And in fact, maybe even more of yourself at the end of the day. But yeah, in terms of like how it perpetuates itself, I think it's the status quo. And I think also this is what Trump is terrifyingly good at, which is exploiting people's fear, and particularly their fear that they're losing something. And that's across the board. That's white people thinking they're losing some sort of racial upper hand. That's men feeling that they're losing some sort of innate God-given gift to rule the world. That is people who see immigrants as stealing something from them. You know, there's this fear of loss, and a continued focus on a fear of loss instead of an abundance. Like, we live on a planet that like self-generates itself, right? Like, we live on a floating rock that self-generates itself. You know, there's so much abundance to be found in this world. But if we continue to allow leaders like Trump, and he is just one of many, but if we allow him to continue to be the voice, spaces like this will always grow.
Nicole Young, you're incredible. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Kennedy.
Got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman. I've got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. That she's a black magic woman. She's trying to make a devil out of me. Turn your back on the baby.
Kellen Sharp is a graduate affiliate at the University of Texas at Austin, Moody College of Communication. He joins us today in the conversation on the Black Manosphere. His research thesis, Mapping the Black Manosphere, is a deep dive into the voices shaping modern Black masculinity online. Through meticulous study and personal insight, Sharp untangles the narratives, the debates, and the undeniable impact of this digital world, both its power and its pitfalls. Kellen Sharp, thank you so much for joining me on Dialogue today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
So how did your personal experiences as a Black man shape your decision to research the Black manosphere? And what emotional revelations did you uncover about Black male identity and vulnerability?
It's the middle of COVID and I'm being inundated by video on top of video, you know, algorithmically on TikTok and such. And then suddenly this person, Kevin Samuels, comes on my page and starts talking about Black masculinity in a way that, number one, I've never heard it discussed.
Women act girly or really feminine in your presence. Yeah, you can take the most strong, independent, powerful I am woman, hear me roar. If you're a select man for her, you'll actually see the little girl pop up inside of her. She'll get girly, kind of feminine.
As a Black man, I've always looked to the media for some sort of representation, you know, and I guess like the burden of representation with limited visibility, you know, in a lot of cases. And so I was initially attracted to this content, starting with Kevin Samuels as like a gateway. But then after critical thought and reflection, you start to kind of sift through and some of these statements, you know, might temporarily sound like empowering, but at what cost and at whose cost, right? Who's being thrown under the bus in these sort of dialogues to uplift? And so that was where the exigence of like my research came in, because I felt like there was something here. There's some sort of wanting, there's some sort of aspirational drive for community and identity, you know, and I felt that resonate throughout the comment section. People be like, oh, I want to work on myself and improve myself as a Black man. But I was disheartened and really disillusioned by the extremely toxic, you know, misogynistic, highly racist, xenophobic rhetoric that permeated these spaces. And so it led me to do kind of like, I take what I like and I leave what I don't. And it got to a point where I was leaving a lot that I don't. And I felt like I should research this.
Did any part of your research take an emotional toll on you?
You watch one Fresh and Fit video, you watch them all. Like, there's only so many times I can hear about these sort of essentialist, you know, really heteronormative gender roles being perpetuated that no one seems to be following, really. It took a toll, because at a certain point, it just felt like all of these sort of red pill, brown pill, pink pill, whatever pill, probably surely believe part of what they're saying, but a lot of it felt they were just stirring the pot, trying to capitalize, trying to monetize, trying to get clicks. You know, after a while, you just kind of see it, and it's like, for what? You know, it's I guess it's very individualistic, but I suppose some people would call that empowering, but I'm unsure.
How do you see the Black manosphere as a sanctuary for some, but it's also a potential source of harm for Black men who are struggling with mental health or identity or social validation?
Absolutely. Research would point to the manosphere, and one of the main like attractions of it is like its ability to reconcile this like ontological insecurity, this sort of security about being oneself, where do I belong in the world? A lot of questions, particularly in our youth, that we just, it's a rite of passage as we figure ourselves out. So in such a hyper-mediated society, right, having little niche communities, you know, algorithmically and linked, or linked by hashtags, or linked by common discourse, is common and quite transformative and informative for particularly like, you know, Black men or any sort of marginalized community, hence like affinity group Reddits that are specifically for certain groups. So I think those are great spaces to seek advice. But what happens is like, it's a pipeline, right? Kind of start off like, hey, dad's not around. How do I tie a tie for prom? Innocuous enough, right? And the next video clicked over here is like, well, why women should only tie your tie and you should never tie a tie. Like, whoa, where do we get, you know? So I think a lot of people are leveraging and using the manosphere as like the end all be all for like information. It's gospel, right? The red pill, the ideology is gospel for many, indicating like a need for some literacy, whether it's through educational institutions or communal, to kind of like hold space for like these growing pains, right? Because you run the risk of someone getting radicalized, right? So it's incentivized and algorithmically pushed. You know, you like this? Well, we've run this algorithm and people that like this video also like this video, right? So at a certain point, you just let stuff run. You know, that's how it happens.
My girl ain't bad. My girl ain't bad. She more like evil. When I'm looking in the mirror. In the mirror. How flies this Negro? She on Hollywood and Vine. Thinking that she Hollywood on Vine. Making movies with her friends all the time. Showing off a does that twerk, twerk. But I saw through it like a wet shirt. Drive slow because you might swerve off me.
Kellen told me there's a shift occurring in this community. From just listening to podcasts to booking tickets abroad, the term quote-unquote passport bro has been used in online spaces to describe men who prefer dating women from other countries, specifically North American men going overseas to find wives with the quid pro quo of getting them a green card through marriage in exchange for a traditional wife.
I've noticed an increase of Black men, particularly part of this manosphere, outsourcing, going to different countries, typically a lot of like East Asia, Latin America, you know, trying to be passport bros. And as an act of neocolonialism, which is what this is, leverage their immense capital of the US dollar to go into other countries and kind of flaunt that around as like, you know, peacocking to attract people. And this is not just Black men, this is men just period. So I think there's a flattening of race generally across the manosphere, right? Where like masculinity or gender is kind of taking prominence as like the connector, you know, a lot of people that feel like they don't reach whatever like sort of societal attraction level, right? The commonalities between men are pulling them together in these groups, right? The Black manosphere, I think as time goes on, more and more they're interchangeable, right? The ideologies are solidifying across. And so I think that's worrisome. But, you know, I guess some good news, though. I mean, a lot of this is kind of falling flat. And a lot of this, these conversations are played out. People are moving on. I think in 10 years, Black manosphere, I think it'll just be irrelevant. So I'm hopeful. As education increases, literacy increases.
Yeah. Kellen Sharp, thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Birds sing flying around. You never see them too long on the ground. You wanna be one of them. Yeah, you wanna be one of them. Yeah.
as we've heard in this conversation, not only is the Black manosphere a corner of the internet and a subset of a larger manosphere, but we've heard from our guests of how the manosphere could adapt and change as 2025 goes on. The dialogue team poses a further question within this ongoing conversation. As we continue to see TikTok algorithms change and new social media apps on the rise, what does the growing influence look like of the Black manosphere, and what does its future impacts hold on the Black community and gender relations? For Dialogue, I'm Kennedy Vincent.